that too loud or though? Okay. It seems so echoey up here. I don't know if you guys are hearing the same thing. Well, you guys, I'm actually interested on this topic. I would love to hear what made you want to come here about the low employee crisis? Like, what's led you to be sitting here? Because there's other places you could be right now. Any comments? Right here. So boy long here, right? Three boys, dad, and her. And she wants to see, make sure she knows the right thing. I better step away from that speaker, wherever it is. I'm sorry. Anyone else? Why are you here today? I thought I sent a hand over here. Yes. How to better teach these kids, these boys who just seem to want to wiggle and ride and hug each other, right? Yeah. Anyone else? Oh, right here.
I think our society is telling kids how they should be nowadays and telling them how they need to be, and I believe it's the wrong thing they're teaching.
Yeah, excellent. Well, guys, I'm very excited about this topic, and actually this morning I wasn't planning to say anything like this, but I had an interesting experience this morning. So I was able to meet all morning. I haven't been here at the conference. I've been over at a church locally where we met with a couple of leaders from our church, my church. And so for those of you who don't, aren't members of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, there's something called an apostle who is one of the leaders of the church. And so I met with an apostle named Neil L. Anderson this morning here at Stake Center. And we had this amazing talk. But one thing that he said that really hit me really hard, and this is paraphrasing him probably rather terribly, but he said, we don't do enough to talk about the good that is happening. We don't put enough light into the world sometimes because it seems so difficult. And so we're about to talk about a couple of difficult things. And so before I do that, I don't know where the speaker's getting me. Maybe that one. I'll go over here. Before I do that, I want to speak of some goodness in the world. Maybe. There's speakers everywhere. Maybe I should get up on the stage or something. I don't know. How's that? Okay. I'm standing in front. Okay, so first of all, I've had opportunities to interact with many of your sons and your daughters. And last week, Elizabeth and I were in Prague at a school called Cora Academy, where we had the chance to meet with 50 youth from all over the world, Brazil, other places in South America, Europe, United States, of course. We had these mentor meetings with them, one-on-one talks with 30 young adults between the age of about 20 and 35. And you guys, I just have to say, your kids and those kids are just absolutely incredible. I just cannot tell you how impressed I am with the generation of youth that we have. And I know we say that all the time, but like specifically their desire to do good, their desire to help people, their desire to try to follow the things that they know are right is unlike anything that I've ever seen in my life. We have these amazing young people that are doing amazing things. And I don't know if we say that enough. I don't know if we tell ourselves enough because it's really easy to get caught up in all the other things, which we're about to do, by the way. But I just want to say that we have these incredible young people, and I love a couple of the comments. We're here because we want to better guide them. We want to better teach them. And so with that reality in mind, you know, we always had this idea, at least since I was young, that I wanted to grow up and do amazing things and be a knight and do great quests, right? Young men, especially boys, they just have this vision that they're going to conquer the world. And that's wonderful, but I think we also have to recognize that as we have come along in the last 20 years or so, something significant has changed that is greatly damaging these young people. And I'm saying young people across the board, but specifically today we're going to talk about young men. You guys probably know some of these statistics, but has everyone heard the word NEET, N-E-E-T? So They think that between 1 and 2 out of every 7 of our young men are now NEETs. What that means is not engaged in employment, education, or training. Essentially, it means they've given up. They're not trying to do anything in their lives. Now, that's a pretty startling statistic, between 1 and 2 out of every 7. That's a lot of our young people that have completely given up. In China, they've given it the name Bailan. Bailan literally means to let it rot. And so in China, what they're seeing, there's close to 50, somewhere between 50 and 80 million Chinese young men. I mean, there's a lot more people there, right? So the numbers are much, much larger. But somewhere between 50 and 80 million Chinese young men who have given up. They have no desire to be promoted. They have no desire to own a business. They have no desire to do anything in their lives other than just enough to survive. And they call themselves Bailan. And they say, and their motto is, lay down. So they take all of these images of themselves just laying on the floor. In Japan, it's even worse. We have this term of hikikomoro. And hikikomoro is the Japanese word that they've given to individuals, young men. There's some young women as well, but these young men in Japan, there's between 1 and 1.5 million of them who've given up so much on society that they never leave their bedroom for anything. They live with their parents, they're provided by their parents, and they never go anywhere nor do anything. They just play video games, have their simulated girlfriends, and there's nothing else in their lives. 1 to 1.5 million of them have given up on life. And so you guys, it's a real concern that we have these young men that in a very real sense are starting to give up on their lives because they're getting hit so hard with one thing after another, and they just don't have any hope that they can succeed. And so I want to talk first today about what are some of those things that are causing this to happen, and then hopefully we can talk a little bit about what are a few things that we can do better to try to make it better. So number one, this one's not a surprise, right? Fatherlessness across the globe has increased significantly. In fact, you know, in the United States, from 1970 to about 2008, somewhere in that range, the fatherlessness increased significantly. We've kind of leveled out at about 40%. But you look at countries like Spain, which is this gray line down below, you look at Europe, the European Union, all of these countries, and France, of course, up there at the top, with almost 60% of their kids are born without fathers at this point. Those are pretty startling statistics, and it doesn't seem to be getting any better for many of these countries. They're trying to enact policies, but it's not really changing the curve at all. And so most of the young people in France and in Europe are now being born without fathers. This also, if you break it down by cultural subsection, it gets even a little more stark. Obviously, some cultures, even within the United States, are significantly worse at this than others. But the problem with that being that fatherlessness is the number one indicator of whether our young people, both male and female, how they're going to succeed in life. It's the number one indicator for young men of whether or not they're going to be sometime in their life put in jail, whether they're going to finish high school, whether they're going to get a career, whether they're going to have all of these success metrics that we have. The number one indicator is whether or not that young man grew up with a father. And yet, as a society, we still continue to ignore this. Let's talk about education. So I know we're at a homeschool conference, but just kind of education in general. The education system has failed our young men. Now, I know I'm preaching to the choir with that, right? But the reality is that the education system for a very, very long time has always been skewed more towards young women than young men. We heard a little bit of that when we first started, right? Young men, what do they like to do? Do they want to sit and listen to somebody teach them something? No. In general, no, right? In general, they want to be moving, and they want to be out hitting things and smashing things and all of those things that young men do, and that's the way that they learn. And yet we created this education system where if you can't sit still for 8 hours per day and listen to a teacher and do exactly the instructions that you've been given, then you are not smart, not successful, and maybe shouldn't be in school or whatever we say. And then we started diagnosing them because of that with all of these things, saying, well, you have a problem. Well, it's just, most of it was just because they couldn't sit still. And so we started medicating for that to try to reverse that and help them be quote-unquote successful at school, when in reality, it was the system itself that was broken, not the kids. And we just continue to perpetuate this on and on and on. So what's that resulted in? Well, we now know that but we have significantly more young women that are now going to college than young men. We have even a more significant number of young women that are graduating from college. Young women are now graduating, they start college, about 46% of them graduate college. Young men is somewhere around 34% of those who start. For the first time, since we've been monitoring this, women now make more money than men on general. Now that was a little bit of a surprising statistic for me, but that's something that's happened in the last couple of years. We completely inverted this thing, and the education system doesn't seem to have any interest in fixing that. So you look at, this was just a survey done of different teachers, and they were asking them the question, how often do you observe boys and girls struggling to sit still? And you can see how the young men were significantly worse at that. That's not going to work on that screen, is it? Okay. So young men, 43% of the time, they notice young men had a hard time sitting still. Sometimes 37% and always 8%. Whereas young women were 16, 40, and 37%. And so it's a very real struggle for these young boys to sit still, to listen, and to do the things that will help them be successful in the system that we've developed to help them go on and live. Now, as I said, the system's always been, I don't want to use the word rigged, but it's always been skewed towards females. Here's the biggest difference I see. It's not the fact that the school system has been broken. When we were young, it was the same school system, and it was still skewed towards young people, or to women instead of men. Before that, it was the same thing. What's changed, in my opinion, is that when we were young, there was a promise that if you gutted it out as a young man, and you got through this, man, this is really bad, isn't it? I don't know where to move. If you gutted it out, then there would be this promise, or quote unquote promise, of possible success. That promise was, okay, go to school, get good grades, eventually you're gonna go to college, get good grades, and then you're gonna get a job. And once you do that, there's gonna be some success in that. Well, now that promise is no longer there, right? So there's not this guarantee that if you go and get a college degree, that you're going to have the same level of success, and there's not that benefit. And so now boys are sitting there thinking, okay, why am I doing this? Why would I sit still for 8 hours a day when it's not going to give me any guarantee of something in the future? And because of that, young men are abandoning school at a much, much higher rate than we've ever seen. They're just quitting because it doesn't make any sense to them. And yet, as an education system, we're not changing. We're not adjusting to try to help them with that. And unfortunately, the kind of the vested interests don't have any real reason to change it, right? There's decentralized decision making. The money flows regardless of how the kids do. And there's the school systems that just, they don't have a real incentive to make any major changes that would affect these young men. So we're kind of stuck with what we have, which is why most of us homeschool. Okay, so the next one, and this is, I want to be tactful in this because we're going to talk a little bit about this idea of toxic masculinity, okay? And I think, unfortunately, what we've done is we've taken this small percentage of a population and applied characteristics at their worst to a full population, right? And so that's kind of what we see with toxic masculinity. I don't know if you guys have seen this recently. There's something going around that was, I think it was like Bear or Man in the Woods. Did anybody else see this? So it was a question out on social media, and it was to women, and it was basically, if you were alone in the woods at nighttime, would you rather run into a bear or a man? And the overwhelming majority of those women answered, I would rather run into a bear in the middle of the woods by myself. And now, again, are there some things that have happened that we have a history of some males, right, doing very terrible things? But to consider that I'd rather run into a bear in the middle of the woods than a man, that's just, it's so far outside of what's reality, right? It's so far out of what's actually happening for these men. And it causes these young people, I mean, how would you feel as a young person, a young man, to hear from one of your peers, I would rather run into a bear than you in the middle of the woods, when you haven't done anything? You have no intentions of ever doing anything. You have none of those thoughts, and yet you're being branded as having this toxic masculinity because maybe you are bigger or stronger or you have some of those characteristics. And so because of the depiction that we started to put out there, this has become very, very difficult. Thank you guys for fixing that. I appreciate it. I'm going to come back down there because I don't really want to be up here. And so we have this entire generation that has now been told, well, because of your masculine traits, you are toxic and you are dangerous. And what has that led to? Well, young men are like, well, why would I want to even try if that's the case? 62%, this is a startling number, 62% of young men, young single men under the age of 30 have already given up on dating. They have no desire to date or to have a companionship because they're so afraid that if they do something wrong, say something wrong, they may get branded with this and could ruin every aspect of their lives. And so the idea is, why would I try? It's safer for me to just not even engage in that type of behavior, right? And you add to that the vastly available amount of sexual content, so whether it's online and pornography, or if it's just the hookup culture that we've established, they don't have any real need or want to have any of these relationships. If they can get those carnal needs met, then there's no reason for them to move outside of that and actually establish a relationship, because relationships are hard and difficult, and they don't want to have any of those big problems. That's compounded by the effect that because of some of the laws that we've created for divorces, there's very little incentive for a man to go into, become, get married, when at the end of the day, they're going to have to battle very hard just to have access to their kids and to be able to provide for their family going forward. And so we've disincentivized all of these men from ever wanting to be fathers. And remember, what's the number one factor of how successful a kid's going to be? It's fatherlessness. And so it's this vicious cycle that we're seeing. And finally, we talk about this, which is the economic struggles. And this is a very real part of why young men are struggling. We've always been established as men, we've had this idea that we are providers, that that's one of our primary roles. That's within religious circles and even outside of that. We've always established that we go out, we hunt, we make the kill, we bring the food home, and provide for our family. That was our social contract with women, which it doesn't always have to be that way, but was a social contract that we entered into and we agreed to. Well, as the economic struggles have increased, the unfortunate fact is that many of the jobs that have been eliminated are those that are male-centric. So if you look at all of the top, most male jobs, you'll start to notice something. Men are inherently more interested in things. So a man likes to do things. They like to hold things, hammer things. Like, and that's, again, these are generalizations, but on whole, men like things and women prefer interactions and relationships. That's not a surprise to any of us, though the world will tell us that that's a silly thing to say, that everyone can have any of those interests, and that's true. But on whole, if you look at the top jobs of a female, a kindergarten teacher, a child care worker, a dental hygienist, a skin care specialist, etc., those are jobs primarily held by women. And if you go back to the males, it's stonemasons and heavy vehicle mechanics and crane towers. So these are the jobs that have, so brick masons and stonemasons, 99.7 of them are men. So only 0.3% of those individuals are women. Well, as we have started to ship our jobs out and we started sending those overseas, and globalization has affected, well, most of those jobs were in the realm of manufacturing, right? And other places where those jobs are now gone, and we've eliminated a large part of that middle kind of upper blue collar work that men used to do. A man could do very, very well going to the steel mill and working hard and providing for his family. Well, now the steel mills are in China, and so these men are a little bit lost. And they're struggling with that economic collapse. And so there's, again, it comes back to this idea of, in general, men are just questioning, why do I even try? Why would I even try to provide? Why would I even enter relationships? And it just continues on and on. So then what do we have? I think two major results. Number one is we have this mental health crisis. This next statistic was again startling to me. Out of every five people that commit suicide, How many of you think are men? Out of every five, give me a number. Two? What was it? It's four. Out of every five people that commit suicide, four of them are men. So men are killing themselves at a rate of four times that of women. If we had any other demographic in the world that had that type of a difference, there would be a major crisis, right? Like we would have a lot of programs to try to work on that. But men are really struggling significantly with this change, to the point where we've already talked about Nietzsche and Hylon and Ikikimoto, where they've just completely given up and they have no hope. And when you have no hope, what does that lead to? Is depression and anxiety. This is a really fun topic, isn't it? This is great. You guys all feeling great? And then the other piece is this, which is when you have no hope and you don't think there's anything for you and you don't want to engage in the world, then there's no goals. There's nothing to look forward to. There's nothing that you want to accomplish. And so what do we see with young men? Well, under the age of 25, one in three of our young men are still living at home with their parents, living in the basement. You know, this is probably an apt description of some of them. And then up to age 30, by the time they reach age 30, we drop it down to about one in five. So about 20% of young men by age 30 are still living at home. But they don't have direction. They don't have this quest. They don't have this thing that they want to try to accomplish because they've been told so many of these things and they've been told that they can't be successful. I think I've used this before, so some of you have probably seen it. In World War II, they had this problem where their bombers were getting shot down like crazy. And so they did a study to try to figure out, okay, so how do we protect more of these bombers so that they can last longer and we can stay in the fight? And so they did an analysis, and this was the analysis they did, of all of the planes. They looked at them and they found all the places where the bullet holes were. So you can see where they got hit the most. And so they thought to themselves, okay, we gotta fix this. So they went and they put a huge program into place and they armored all of the places where the planes are getting shot more often, thinking that if we armor them, then we're gonna be able to continue the fight more. Well, they did all of this work, spent millions of dollars, and it changed absolutely nothing. So why is that? All of the planes that they evaluated were planes that came home. So think about that for a second. So all of the planes that they evaluated are the ones that got shot and blasted to pieces, but still made it home. And all the planes that they didn't evaluate were the ones that went down. And so they actually, as they thought about it, they're like, oh, well, instead of arming these places where all the red holes are, we've got to armor the places that don't have red holes, because those are the ones that didn't make it home. And so they switched it completely. They started addressing the right problem, and suddenly now they increased the longevity of these aircraft and significantly reduced the amount of deaths that they had. And so I think as far as it comes to the young man problem, we have a little bit of the same thing. We seem to want to, as a society, continue to address the wrong problems. And so where are some places I think we can make a difference and how can we address some of this? Well, first of all, I want to go back to what I said a little bit earlier, which was if we had any other demographic that was killing themselves at four times the rate of somebody else, there would be a program in place. But we don't for men. And I think one of the reasons, and again, nothing that I'm saying today, I don't think there's some conspiracy, like, so there's not some conglomerate out there trying to cause problems, right? And I think this is just well-intentioned people and programs that have come across over the years. But there seems to be, for this problem of struggling men, there seems to be a huge lack of empathy. And I think part of that is because men truly have, for many centuries and for most of human civilization, enjoyed some huge privileges that other classes didn't get to enjoy. And so now we get to this point where men are truly struggling, and it's a little bit of, well, time serves Ryan, right? It's about their time. They got to take their lumps. And so we see some apathy as it relates to this, and truly a lack of empathy for men, saying, well, you know, and we kind of have this culture too that we've developed, which is, we'll quit crying about it, just keep going, right? And so we need to start to change that in some ways, especially with our children, right? Like, we need to recognize that these are real problems, and we need to start trying to address them. So, number one, we need to modify education. And there's several things that we can talk about, but just maybe some basic things. And we can't, you know, I like this because we don't make change to chance. We have to do it. And so I think a couple of things you guys are interested in. Number one, we need to modify how we're doing our education throughout the day. Young men, as you said, truly need time to bounce off the walls and do things. Now, again, that's a generalization. Not all of your kids, not all of your sons need that. But in general, they need shorter periods of focused attention and longer periods of physical exertion. Okay, and I know that's difficult, especially as it gets cold and everything, but they need something that takes their mind completely off of that mental focus and moves them into some form of physical exertion for a longer period of time. And it needs to be spaced out throughout the day. It can't be, you know, school systems have kind of tried to do this with, like, you know, recess and lunchtime, but it's not enough. The young men can't get enough at that pivot point, and they can't focus for the long periods of time in between. And so there's a lot of recommendations out there. Some people say that your instruction should be as short as 25 minutes of focused effort, and then maybe like 40 to 50 minutes of physical exertion. And here's the thing. What you can't let them do is do 25 minutes of focused effort and then go 20 to 40 minutes of doing nothing or reading fantasy or playing video games or doing something else like that. It needs to be up and moving. It can't just be something else. That's not the point of this. It needs to be something that they can go and interact with. So that's one thing that we certainly need to change. Number two, which is really interesting to me, they did a study on young men's willingness to read. And I didn't realize this because I have kids. My kids love to read, and they love, like, everything fantasy. I have a son that will read like 1,000 pages of fantasy books in 2 days. Like, he just eats it for breakfast, lunch, and dinner. But what they found was, in general, young women prefer made-up stories and fiction. So they like fiction, they like fantasy. Young men actually prefer nonfiction. And maybe some of you are shaking your heads like, I already knew that. But I didn't know that. But so what they found was they went through every reading list of like all the schools in the country, and they are predominantly fiction because we always thought that all the kids wanted stories. Whereas in reality, a lot of these young men would do better with biographies and nonfiction things. And so we need to flip our reading list just a little bit. We need to add more of that nonfiction in for these young men so that they can be engaged and have a desire to read. Now, of course, if it's an interesting story that comes along with that nonfiction, that's even better. Things like Endurance and books like that, the boys just seem to eat it up, and they absolutely love it. But we tend to think, well, we want them to read these other things that we read because those are the reading lists that we were given. But remember, those were made predominantly to benefit young women more than young men. So we've got to flip that story. Number three, in the way that we change education, you have to eliminate, all of us, I should say, not you, we all have to eliminate, we have to stop comparing young men to young women. We cannot compare boys to girls at the same age level. Boys are 18 months behind in their development process. And yet they show up at this youngest age, and we expect them to be equal. And when they're not, we make comparisons. And when we make those comparisons, they're the wrong comparisons. We have to eliminate that comparison system completely within our homeschool education. And you can't say, your sister did this when she was that, or your sister like this. It needs to be individualized and directed towards them. The comparison will not help these young men. It will help the young men because they'll feel like they're ahead and they're being successful. But it doesn't help the young man at all when we compare them to their sisters or their cousins. Number four, young men need skills training. They need hands-on, do something with their hands, get dirty, and learn a skill. And so, men, I'm looking at all of you at this point, okay? And I'm pleading with you, if you aren't already, take a very engaged and active participation in your son's education, specifically in this aspect. They need to learn skills. Not because we think that we don't go teach them how to change a tire and how to rebuild an engine because we want them to be mechanics. We teach them that because it gives them what we call competence anchors. these young men don't have very many competence anchors because they're always playing catch up on the education side and on the scholarly side. And so because they're lacking that, they don't have any of the competence that they need in order to attack the world we want them to. They need these anchors of competence. And so when you go out and you teach them how to sharpen a knife, or you go out and you teach them how to build a fire or set up a tent. And I think one of the things that, you know, the scouting program had a lot of flaws, but what was great about the scouting program is that it had a regular schedule to teaching young men skills in life and competence anchors. And so when the scouting program has declined, we have less and less and less of this. But our young men need to learn these skills. Again, not because you hope that they sharpen their lives for the rest of their lives, because it gives them confidence. My dad and my grandpa, I remember growing up as a young man and thinking, they can do anything. I don't know how my dad and my grandpa knew how to do anything. They didn't have YouTube. Like, if I know how to do anything, it's because I know how YouTube things and I can then fix it. But they just seem to know everything. Like, I remember one time, I had a little Ford Escort, a white Ford Escort, it was like a 1990-something, and I couldn't get it to start. And I called my dad, and I said, Dad, I don't know what's wrong with this thing. I checked the battery, I've done all these things, and my dad goes, well, it's probably the relay. If you get underneath the dashboard, it's like right up on the left-hand side. My dad never had owned a Ford Escort in his life. I had no idea. And it's not like he went and looked at a manual. He just said, yeah, it's probably the relay, here it is, and you can change that out. And so I did it, and boom, the Ford Escort started, and we were on our way. I don't know how my dad knew everything, but our boys need to see that Dad knows some things, right? And they should aspire to knowing those things. They should aspire to having these competencies where they can provide in the future in some way. Now, one of the things I regret most is ever letting my wife know that I can fix anything. I wish I hadn't done that. But I'm actually at the same time very grateful, because now, and so funny, our family, if I suggest to Elizabeth, hey, why don't we have somebody fix that? You would think that I committed adultery. She'd be like, what are you talking about? Like, you can fix that. I said, yeah, but I don't want to fix that. I said, well, you go fix it, because I'm not paying for it. And this is just how it's been for our whole marriage. But you guys, that's what we want our young people to be. That's what we want our sons to be able to do. Right? And so we have to do it. No one else is going to teach them. There is no scouting program. There's no education system that's going to do it to them. We have to do it ourselves. Sorry, I went a little long on that, but this is something passionate for me, okay? We need to have these confidence anchors. All right, this is what I love. And moms, this one's more for you. As a kid, I always loved motorcycles and just absolutely adored everything motorcycle decks. When I first started earning a little bit of money, the first thing I told my dad was, I want to buy a motorcycle. And he said, okay, that's fine. I'll pay half if you save enough money. And I think we found an old motorcycle for like $500 at the time. It was a 1978 Suzuki RM350. I remember everything about this bike. I took it apart more times than I can count. I got the bike. I saved up all my money. I got the bike. The week I got my bike, my friends were like, hey, we should go ride. Now, I wasn't a rider at that point. I had ridden a pedal bike, and I'd ridden a little 125 before, but I could not ride a motorcycle the way that I wanted to. But my friends rode all the time. And I said, hey, we're going to go up to this cool trail. Why don't you help us? And so we jump on our bikes. They come to my house. We jump on my bike. And from my house to the main road we were going to try to get on, it's about a half a mile. It's a dirt road. And so we jump on, and they just flat out take off down the road. And so I'm trying to keep up with my friends. I've got this RM350 pegged, and we're going, you know, 60, 70 miles an hour down this dirt road. We're flying along, and they get to the main road, and they turn, and they start heading up, because we're going to go up the hill behind us. As I start to get close to that, I wasn't a good enough rider to do what they had done, which was, you know, power through the corner and take off. But I thought I could. And so I didn't slow down. I just kept attacking these corners. I had to catch up with my friends. And I went fast, and then I got really scared because I realized I can't make this corner. It is really sharp. It's like this. And so I locked my brakes up. And right at the time I locked my brakes up, I come to the part of the road where there's gravel. You know, it grows gravel and then it goes up onto pavement. Locked my brakes up, hit the gravel, and you guys all know what happens. The bike just completely, just like I got on ice. Went out from under me. I'm laying on my side and skidding along up and over the pavement. And then on the other side, now it's starting to get scary because on the other side is a barbed wire fence. And I'm still sliding, and I'm not stopping, and I'm freaking out, trying to drag myself and stop myself. My bike slams into the barbed wire, and it stops, and luckily I stopped short of the barbed wire. I'm laying there thinking, oh my gosh, what is going on? I'm bleeding. I didn't know at the time how much road rash I had, which was significant. It was pretty much all down my back and my side. And so I started picking myself up. And then, of course, the embarrassing part, like, it was bad enough that I crashed, but my friends come back and they're like, dude, what happened? And I'm like, well, I don't know. I went too fast. They said, did you try to go right up a little fast? I said, yeah. And they all laughed at me. And they said, well, you should probably go home. We're going to keep riding. You know, that's what friends do. And so I picked my bike up, and I hobbled home. And they took off, and I had a great time riding. Now, was that dangerous? Yes. That was a dangerous activity for me to participate in, right? However, before we left, my mom and dad insisted that I wear a helmet, which was not always the case in the 1980s or 1990s, whatever it was. But I was doing something dangerous in a careful way. Now, as a kid, I wasn't as careful as I could have been, but I was trying to do dangerous things carefully. We need our kids to do dangerous things carefully. We live in a world where we worry way too much about protecting our kids from the physical dangers they encounter, and not nearly enough time protecting them from the digital dangers that they encounter. And we need to flip that. Some of you guys have probably read Anxious Generation. If not, add it to your list of things to read. But our kids benefit, and especially our young men benefit, when they do really hard, sometimes scary, and even dangerous things. Now, our job is not to prevent that. Our job is not to prevent the kids from climbing the tree. It's not to prevent our young men from buying a motorcycle and going and hurting themselves. There will be broken bones. There will be things that happen. Our job is to help them do it safely so it doesn't cause permanent damage. And I say that half jokingly, but I really mean that. They need this challenge. They need to know that they can push themselves. They need to know that they can go to the edge sometimes. And a broken collarbone off a motorcycle or a pedal bike is not the end of the world. Statistically, it's interesting. Over the last 10 years, if you look at hospital admissions into the ER for our young people, they have plummeted. Now, you initially think, as a mom or a dad, you're like, well, that's wonderful. We have less people going to the ER. But what that actually means is that our young people aren't doing it. They're not sledding. They're not motorcycling. They're not climbing trees. They're scared to death to do it because we have convinced them that dangerous things are bad, and they're not doing it. Now, I don't necessarily want my kid in the ER, but I definitely want them to be doing something that, if they're doing it carefully, then maybe they get a broken bone once in a while, and I'm okay with that. Now, that may be controversial, but I really believe our young men need that. All right, boy moms, does it ever look like this? Our young men need to wrestle. They need to get some energy out. They need to have these, you know, combat sports are wonderful for young people because, and especially young men, because it allows them to have this time to wrestle around. And I don't know, so in our family, this is hard, right? Because we have girls in the mix too. And the girls are every bit as tough, you know, and usually one of them ends up crying. And then I stop and I say, okay, nobody can wrestle anymore today. But then I have to reevaluate and be like, okay, is that really what I want? No, I want them wrestling. And so oftentimes I'll just go wrestle with them. And then I'm the one that hurts somebody, they cry. But it's okay if dad hurts them, it's just not okay if brother hurts them. And so they need to rough and tumble. The last thing I want to talk about as far as education is this. Boys benefit when we explain the process. They're not as adept at just like taking something on and just doing it. They're not good at like, this is the instruction, read this, and then doing it. They need to understand processes behind things. And I know that takes extra time, but if you can help them understand, hey, the reason when we're writing a book is we want to spend time on character, we want to spend time on this, because when you do that, it starts to, you know what I'm saying? So you're walking them through this entire process so they understand that the assignment is not just you've got to write a paragraph, but there's a process to what we're doing to try to help you become better at writing. It doesn't always work, but when we explain process and not just give tasks, boys benefit from that, and they seem to struggle to thrive in that system. We need to re-enshrine heroes. And I'm not going to talk about that because there's two that I really want to talk about. How much time do I have left? Like just a couple minutes? It's perfect. This is perfect. You know, there's two things. There's this idea that AI is going to ruin the world, and I'm not completely against that idea. I mean, I think there's some validity to that. But we primarily think of like big reasons it's going to end the world, like Terminator, right? It's going to come and get us, and it's going to destroy everything. Or the other one more common today is, well, AI is going to take all our jobs. And I think there is some reality to that. And I talk about that rather extensively, why I don't think that's as big of a concern as we should make it. But there are two huge concerns that I actually do have as it comes to AI. And I wanted to share that with you because I think it applies directly to your young boys, and I think in some ways also to your young women. Number one, how many of you guys remember WALL-E? Such a great, great movie, right? And if you remember, when WALL-E finally got off of Earth and got up to the spaceship, he had finally encountered humans. And they looked a little bit like this. So these are the humans depicted in WALL-E. You guys, this, I think, is one of the concerns that we do have with AI. Not that we look like this. They did a study last year, or I think 2 years ago now. It was in a school in Connecticut, and they wanted to, this Connecticut school had started to use AI for all of their education. So every student had their own AI tutor, and they were monitoring how well the students were doing on the measures that they cared about as a result of AI tutors. And it was pretty astounding. This Connecticut school, all of their scores increased significantly, like in the double digits of improvement from before they had AI to when after they had these AI tutors. Because it was very beneficial that each kid now had like their own tutor to teach them exactly kind of what they needed and help them pace themselves. So across the board, they did really, really well on all the standardized tests. Well, a little while after that, they came back and did a second study on the same group of kids. But it wasn't about standardized tests. What they wanted to know was, what was the effect of using these AI tools on a regular basis on their ability to create and innovate and solve problems? So these same kids that increased in double digits on the standardized test, when they reevaluated the data and did the new study, they actually dropped significantly in their ability to innovate and create. AI is this amazing tool, but too often what I see happening is we're handing over the creative process when AI is really just a tool to help us with the administrative process. AI is amazing if I give it a story that I've created, my own creativity, it can help me wordsmith and get all the things correct that need to be. And that's wonderful. I have a son who can't write to save his life, but he's really creative. He has great stories. And when you ask him to tell a story, it's unbelievable. We ask him to write it, and it's like pulling teeth. And so for him, it's been an awesome tool to utilize AI to get these ideas out, to speak them, and it transcribes them, and then AI helps him put the punctuation in the right place. That's the proper use, in my opinion, of AI as a tool. We have to stop giving it the creative opportunities because that's what makes our kids unique and allows them to succeed and thrive. So that's one of my big concerns, is that we turn into this because we hand over the creative process way too much. And so try to utilize AI in the right way. It's administrative, not creative. The last one, though, is even bigger concern for me. We all understand the evil pull of pornography, right? And our young men, you guys, are certainly struggling with this. And it seems to be that the gateway to pornography for many of them is through simple video games, you know, like Minecraft or Roblox. As I meet with young men and they tell me about their pornography addiction, I would say over 75% of them say that it started in Minecraft, in that one single game. Because it just gives them this downtime that they're in there, and then it leads them to these other things. And so they have lots of hours in Minecraft, and eventually leads to these pornography addictions that they have. That's a huge concern. But as we look into the future and we look at AI, a bigger concern is going to be this, and this is not just for young people, probably for all of us. Imagine a world where as a male or anybody really, you put on a set of VR goggles that immerses you in a world where you get to decide everything that happens within that world. And pornography companies are already onto this, by the way. Now imagine that you meet, you know, as a man, you meet the most beautiful woman you've ever seen in your entire life, who has all of the features that you dream about, because AI has, through your preferences, has put this person together and knows exactly who it is that you are most interested in. And now you have an opportunity within that to do or ask for anything that you desire will be done within that virtual system. without any of the repercussions of having a relationship, this AI virtual person is never going to say, well, you're kind of a knucklehead. Why did you do it that way? Which is what wives are supposed to do. But that's not going to happen in this virtual world, right? And instead, it's going to be this person who acquiesces and gives anything that you could dream up in the worst possible ways, in some cases. And then you add to that, which again, the AI companies are already onto this, the porn companies. Now you add to what we call haptics, which are, you know, physical suits that give sensations. And now you've created a perfect storm of destruction. There's not anyone in this room, or probably anyone in the world, that if they had access to that and they started to use that, they would be able to break free of that. It's too powerfully bonding with the dopamine receptors in our brain and the way that we function. None of us would be able to resist that temptation. And if you really want to think about an end game for AI, like an AI end game, that's probably it. It's a world where all of us are so connected to those things that we have no desire to have any real relationships or any real world experiences. That's a huge concern for me as it comes to AI, and especially for our young men, because they are so adept and so interested in that world, and the world of video games and other things. And they're already so drawn by pornography. It is this perfect storm that will destroy our young men. I don't know exactly what the long-term answer is. That is a society. But I know for us and for our kids, you have to be aware that that's out there. You have to be aware that it's going to be available to them in the next 5 years. That's something that's a reality for every one of them. And we have to prepare them and help them understand why that's so destructive. So here we are. We don't know what the future is going to look like. We don't know how it's going to play out. But you guys, I'll come back to what I started with, which is your sons are amazing. They are truly special. They are some of the greatest people that have ever been on the face of this earth. And they are powerful. And we have this job of just trying to shepherd them through this crazy time that they're living in. But it's possible. They can be these things. We just have to realign them into that reality. We have to help them understand that being an influencer or being a Minecraft master is not the same as going out and being amazing and repelling. Like, we have to start readjusting them to these things that are truly important and that will truly prepare them and protect them. And I know that you guys are the perfect people to do it. So I appreciate you coming today and listening. Really appreciate your time.